all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Portland on 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Can't get good reception of KBOO on your radio? Just type in www.kboo.fm on your PC or laptop and click on Listen Live. We're just a mouse click away.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.
Hey, yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Broadcasting from the Hip Hop Weekly Studios, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Civic Cypher. I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward, and you are listening to Civic Cypher.
Indeed you are. This week we're going to be playing catch up. I promise we haven't been slacking on our duties. There's just been a mountain of news that is coming our way, and trying to pick some things to discuss just felt like we'd be leaving too much on the table. So let's call it gumbo. We're going to be running some stories by you that exist at the local level, state level. We're going to be running some stories by you that exist at the national level. We're going to be talking about stuff with respect to education and initiatives to subjugate and marginalize Black and brown people. We're going to be talking about really a whole lot of everything, because that's what's been going on since we last spoke. We're also going to spend a not insignificant amount of time discussing the GOP/Republican loyalty to the former president. We around here think it's borderline sick. And I don't mean that to say that if you're a conservative voter and that's just your, you know, your path and your test in life, that, you know, there's a problem there. But to this man in particular,
you are such a graceful person.
I have to be. I have to be. So we're going to talk about that, what the obsession is and where the loyalty stems from, because we need to know about it. And we feel like if you know about it, you'll be a bit more empowered. We have those things.
I have an idea.
Yeah, indeed. We're going to talk about those and so much more on today's show. But first things first, like we always do at this time, we're going to discuss Ebony Excellence. And today's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Major Threads, and our reading comes from ABC News. And normally I'd be the one reading it to you, but I have to pass the mic to the legend himself, Q Ward, for reasons you'll soon discover.
You know, we got some news this week that was heartbreaking in general.
Sure.
But heartbreaking being the term I'm using very intentionally.
Yeah, and purposely.
And very specifically.
For yourself.
Because the first time that I had heart palpitations, if you will, the first time that my heartstrings were plucked, there was a lady with this really, really big hair and this really, really powerful voice and the longest, most amazing legs that I'd ever seen in my 5-year life. And, you know, I smile and I laugh because Ramses, you know, passed this to me because he knows my story and my affection for the giant that we lost, and that's Tina Turner. From ABC News, Tina Turner dies at 83. A life well lived. Rolling Stone once named her one of the greatest singers of all time. Born Anna Mae Bullock, November 26, 1939, in Tennessee, Turner began performing at a young age as a teenager. She immersed herself in the local rhythm and blues scene. In 1956, she met Ike Turner from the band Kings of Rhythm and became part of their act under the stage name Tina Turner. Together, they recorded hits in the 1960s, including A Fool in Love, It's Gonna Work Out Fine, I Idolize You, River Deep, Mountain High, as a part of the Ike and Tina Turner Review. In 1971, their cover version of Creedence Clearwater's revival Proud Mary became a hit, and Nutbush City Limit climbed the charts as well. Tina went on to record What's Love Got to Do With It, and just really had an immense impact on the life of so many. She needs so much more time than we had to give her.
Listen,
but
two-time inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, movie Grammy star, on and on. Yeah. So Ebony Excellence, indeed a life well lived. Now, we got a few stories to go through. The story that incensed me the most this week. I suspect it's one of the stories that incensed
those
you.
Those words should be so heavy. The story that incensed me the most, considering some of you know the type of subject matter that we cover every week. Yeah. And then you'll hear all the stories that we're covering this week.
Yeah.
The idea that something stood out amongst those things is saying a lot.
So, Ann Coulter, for those that don't know, is a conservative media pundit, author, and syndicated columnist. She's a lawyer, and she has 2.1 million followers on Twitter. She is not a nobody in conservative circles. She's been on the news countless times, a very, very far right wing sort of person. And the people on the left that make fun of her affectionately refer to her as like racism in human form, right?
That's a way to put it.
But there's always been this veneer of plausible deniability.
Has there?
I know there hasn't. But they believe that and they stand behind it, which kind of leaves them.
They never did.
Right. Well,
they did stand on it.
That's what I'm trying to say.
They did pretend to believe
it. That's what I'm trying to say. Thank you.
Because they felt the same way she does.
You needed to clear that up. Thank you for that, because you're absolutely right. They know better. And I believe she knows exactly who she is and what she means, but she's used coded language. And again, she's a lawyer, so she's not a stupid person. Well, you know what I mean. But she's always been able to be just crafty enough, like many others that are like really far right, just crafty enough to be able to evade significant pushback from her followers and supporters. Mm-hmm. And in other words, she's not using the N-word, which is, you know, anything short of that, people can say, well, I'm not racist. I have a black friend. I'm not racist. I've never used the N-word. And indeed live much of their life supporting racist initiatives and turning a blind eye to others that do the same. So this is Ann Coulter. And as I mentioned, the thing above all else this week that incensed me, this is some rare air for me to be in, right? I know the world that I live in. It is not comfortable. Nobody deserves this. I think that we deserve better, right? I don't think that's saying a lot either, right? But she put a tweet up referring to the NAACP's warning there's like a travel ban or travel restriction or something in the NAACP.
It's more like a travel advisory.
Advisory, that's warning. What I'm looking
for. It's not a restriction. It's not a ban. It's just saying, hey,
steer clear.
If you're going to be traveling at all, maybe Florida shouldn't be at the top of your list right. as places to visit, as places to frequent, and as a place to go spend money, because if you've been watching the news at all,
Florida's
the government gunning, down there
gunning for black folks
is gunning for everybody not white, it seems.
Well, they have one group, which we'll get to it. Yeah,
we'll
one
to
group that they're using.
Yeah,
to, that's again, use that veneer to say, hey, we're not racist. Look at this one group. We're treating these handful of people okay, and they're not white. Everybody else, look, do like them, and we'll be fine. Anyway, Ann Coulter, in response to the NAACP's advisory, put a tweet out. And
she's so classy.
It says, NAACP issues warning to African Americans to avoid visiting Florida. Employees in restaurant and tourism industry brace for a 0.00% drop in tips. Okay, now I need you to talk about this one, but let me set it up for our listeners that don't know about this stereotype. So among many stereotypes and prejudices and preconceived notions, especially from people who don't regularly interact with many black people from many different socioeconomic backgrounds and faith traditions and parts of the country, et cetera, right? There is a myth that exists that black people are not good tippers, among many that are very damaging, very harmful, and very negative. But typically, the racism, the prejudice is not out loud. Whereas right here, we have it in a tweet. It's unfounded when you apply it to an entire ethnic group. And she did it for laughs, maybe? I don't understand. So there's the setup. That's why she used these 0.00% drop in tips. She's trying to be cheeky there. Okay. Go ahead, Q.
Tips. I forget, because tips mean something. I think it used to be an acronym. And now it's just a word that we use. Was never intended to be how you got paid. You were supposed to go make a living wage.
Mm-hmm.
And then if your service was extraordinary, people will pay you extra on top of that. I say that because for my entire working life, I won't even say an adult because I got my first job before I was an adult. I have not been able to hold people in service of me accountable.
Because of that myth.
I've tipped no matter how awful your service was.
20%.
Because as soon as I walk in the door,
you know that exists.
As soon as you're being of service to me,
you know.
I know that there is a chance that you've been schooled in this way.
To think I won't tip you.
That your mind, as soon as you saw me, thought, that guy.
Yeah.
Or those guys.
Yeah.
Or that family.
Yep.
Or that group.
Thank you.
Is it going to tip?
The reason I'm finishing your sentences is because that's the same with me.
And it's not because I wasn't great at my job. It wasn't because I was rude and unattentive and apathetic in the way that I carried on. It's because they're black and they just don't tip. So I have never been able to, in the way of withholding my tip because the service wasn't great, as a way of encouraging better service, I've never been able to do that.
Right.
Because I never wanted to
be associated with that stereotype.
I never wanted to add credence.
There you go.
I never wanted to justify the feeling that person had.
Sure.
I never wanted to prove anyone right. So if you've ever served me somewhere, you've gotten a really good tip, not always because you were great, but because I refused
to give credence to that
feed.
Yeah.
that ignorance.
Exactly. Now, I want to say something. The truth is that Black people aren't the only one that this is associated with. This has been associated with a lot of different people throughout the years, notably Jewish people. And it is unfair 100% of the time. But again, to see it out in print like this or in a tweet feels a bit low, even for her. Moving on. You thought that was funny? North Carolina State Representative Jeff McNeely was asked North Carolina State Representative Abel Jones, he was not an athlete or a minority, would he have been able to attend Harvard? So here we have another one where and this one, I actually kind of feel bad about this guy, Jeff McNeely, because a lot of times conservative white men who get their news from one, two sources that are also deeply conservative, right? If you get your news from a very left-leaning source, then sure. But the fact of the matter is that the truth has a liberal bias to it. The fact of the matter is that the majority of the people in this country have a liberal philosophy about them. The majority of human beings in their entirety or old enough to vote. And the reason elections are competitive is because of things like gerrymandering, because of things like voter suppression, and because of things like the Electoral College. Exactly. But that doesn't mean that we are a divided country. We are a liberal country. We are a liberal planet, in fact, right? But again, if you're this person and you get your news from this source, then it might appear as though you only know about the myths associated with affirmative action and the myths associated with great replacement and deep state and all these weird things that you might believe are very true. And if you believe them to be true, that ignorance might manifest itself on the North Carolina House of Representatives floor when you ask out loud of your own mouth and then subsequently have to apologize, a Black representative, Abel Jones, if he was not an athlete or a minority, would he have been able to attend Harvard? I want you to know that when the Representative Abel Jones responded, he said, "When I graduated Harvard, I was in rank number 2. And so he earned his place there. So that feels like another sort of cheap shot that we've had to deal with this past week. But moving on, because there's a few more here. There was a recent story about a group of homeless veterans that were removed from a New York hotel to make room for migrants. And the story made waves through right-wing media. Now, this story has been proven to be false. According to the Mid-Hudson News, homeless men in the area said they were paid to pose as veterans and corroborate the false story to a local chamber of commerce. The men identified the person who bribed them as Sharon Tony Finch. They said she has not paid them the $200 they were promised for their role in the hoax. Okay, so let me back up a bit. For those that maybe you don't find yourself on the Breitbart sites and the, again, these far right borderline, sorry, I can't even say borderline because Q's here.
Please don't.
Bonafide, hateful sites that perpetuate division in this country and attack anything that is even remotely humane. this false story was circulated to suggest that migrants were taking precedence over veterans. Now, mind you, this is the party on the right, Republicans, that have voted to limit funding to the VA for veterans, to and a lot of local elections, and sorry, on the local political arenas around the country, have pushed back against efforts to treat houseless people humanely, and a lot of them are veterans as well, right?
Yeah, they don't actually care.
This is my point.
It's good marketing to pretend you care.
This is my point.
You know, just like, you know, we noticed with the Blue Lives Matter movement, a lot of those people have moved to defund now as the slogan that they cry out, because, you know, do everything exactly the way I want you to do it or you have no worth. It's kind of the subscription that they have subscribed to. And they pretend to honor, love, respect, and care about our veterans, but there's no proof. Like, there's zero proof. There's no statistics to back that as an idea.
And you know who is actually,
or politically,
you know who is actually trying to push initiatives that actually do help benefit and fund the VA and benefit our veterans? Democrats. But who has the narrative, at least,
and
to their
even to fund law enforcement?
Oof, yeah, that too. But who has the narrative, at least with their base, their voter base? The Republican.
Yeah, I wish their base
got news from other sources.
I wish their base actually cared.
Or cared.
It doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. Once upon a time, they would have needed to get some unbiased, unslanted news.
Sure.
But they're beyond the point now where that matters. They, even when the real news reported by them is awful, it's cool.
Yeah. We'll get to that in the second part of the show. All right, moving on. Florida. Here we go again. Florida now requires schools to teach AAPI history. How about that? AAPI, Asian American.
Florida?
Florida.
The state that just made it illegal to teach African American history?
Indeed. How about that, right?
Why would they do such a thing, Ramsey?
Well, real quick, AAPI, for those who don't know, stands for Asian American and Pacific Islander, right? So that is a very specific and indeed very small, in terms of the numbers, minority group in this country, right? Now, Florida wants their history to be taught, which in and of itself, we both would say, and I believe everyone should say, is amazing, right? But the reason Florida is doing this, I'll explain. What they're trying to do is push the model minority myth. For those that are unfamiliar, Asian Americans are purported to be the model minority in the United States of America, right? Everyone should be like the Asians, right? Now, everyone does not have the history that Asian folks do. Everyone does not have the constant opposition that Asian people have. Not to say that Asian people have not had their fair share of opposition, but indeed there's a longer history here with African-American people, and the legacy of that history has profound implications even to this day. Plus, there are a lot more Black people in this country, and this country interacts with Black people differently. We love our AAPI brothers and sisters, and we always will. So this is never going to be a conversation of us versus them, because we're, as far as I'm concerned, we're always on the same team. This is also an attempt to keep the racialized structure stable. Asians are used to triangulate and wedge a group between Black people and white people, right? And really, the state and the government and these far-right Republicans.
Give them someone to point to so that they can claim
there you go.
That they're not racist.
There you go. What I have written says the same thing. It says to avoid accountability so that they can say that they aren't racist. We're not racist. Look at this group. We want their history taught, right? So that's another thing that's happening. And then these last couple of things I really need to share with you. Florida State Bill 1718 was a pushback on immigration. I implore you to look it up. But now Kansas is following Florida. Okay? So Kansas House Bill, HB 2350, attacks immigration. So Kansas governor vetoed this bill, but their House legislature passed it anyway by overriding the veto. It goes into effect July 1st, and it makes it a level 5 felony to transport someone who's in the U.S. illegally.
This is just racist nationalism for the sake of it.
All the way
Kansas
out loud.
This isn't a border state.
On top of that, Kansas, what are they doing in Kansas? They farm agriculture. So I don't know what they're going to do to keep that economy going or whatever they export from that place. But you need to know about this because we also stand with, I'm from California. So I grew up with Mexican people from Mexico and from California. My children are half Mexican. Q's children are half Mexican. So this will always be applied this near and dear to both of our hearts.
Get this last thing in about Texas.
University of Texas system is trying to ban educators from using the word racism. Up to and including jail time. There's even a hotline people can use to snitch on educators. They're planning on using $6 million to implement and enforce this policy. Now, what does that remind you of? Fascism. And it's not just the University of Texas. It's not just Kansas. It's not just Florida. You need to be aware, and hopefully we've made you a little bit more aware.
And now,
Proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalist, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
For those of you just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am frustrated.
I'm going to let you down. But
I am discouraged. I am, because of an earlier topic, heartbroken. And less and less hopeful.
I got enough hope for the both of us, so don't worry about that.
Wow, man.
Well, listen, this is my partner, Q Ward, and we do this show for you every week. We appreciate your support, and we appreciate you listening for the next part of the show because we got more to talk about. We're going to be discussing why GOP voters are so loyal to Trump. It's eluded me, and I think I have a little bit more insight.
It has not eluded me.
Well, we're going to talk about it. I'm going to learn from you today. And we're also going to talk about some more cool stuff. But first and foremost, let's discuss becoming a better ally. Baba, B-A-B-A. Today's Baba is sponsored by Unknown Union, the fashion house situated at the intersection of meaning, innovation, and culture. For more information, check out unknownunion.com. All right. Shout out to the Smithsonian. We like those guys. They treat us good. And I will read. The Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture will host its second annual hip hop block party this August, featuring performances, interactive art, and focused exhibits celebrating 50 years of the genre. The block party will take place on Saturday, August 12th. The museum announced recently. The event will be held at the intersection of Madison Drive Northwest and 14th Street Northwest outside of the museum. This is in Washington, D.C., for those that don't know. And it is worth it to make your way there. I know Q and I are going to be there. Q and I have been there.
I can't wait to go back.
Yes. And we have a lot of friends there and supporters there. And it's just an awesome time and a life-changing experience to have. We wouldn't say it if it wasn't true. Man, even me who grew up with all this beautiful history that is troubled and hard and gorgeous and inspirational and all of everything in the middle. Man, it grew me up even more than I thought I would experience in a museum like that. Please go. All right, I'll keep reading. A full-time lineup of artists and programming will be released in the coming months, according to the museum. The event will be free to attend, though tickets are required for entry and will be available online in July. While the inaugural 2022 celebration marked the one-year anniversary of the Smithsonian's anthology of hip-hop and rap, this summer's event will celebrate 50 years of the genre's evolution and innovation. In conjunction with the event, the museum will install an outdoor panel exhibition including artifacts from the museum's collection. party also coincides with the museum's high-profile Afrofuturism exhibit. So, again, the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. Be there. All right. Why are GOP voters so loyal to Trump? I want to let you know that I sourced a lot of our talking points from a conversation, from an article. This was published in The Hill, and the author was Caroline Vakil. So credit where it's due, because these are some interesting things to think about. And of course, I want to shout out Yahoo News as well for sending this over. I'll read a bit. Trump's lead in the presumptive field of GOP presidential candidates has widened in most polling, even as he finds himself embroiled in high-profile legal battles and as the party grapples with a worse-than-expected midterm election. That by itself is, it shouldn't be surprising, and yet it still is. Now, you bring up this point quite a bit on the show, Q. Once upon a time, we had a video of a man who was running for president on a bus with a reporter or journalist, something like that. And he says, you know, if you're famous, they let you do it. You can walk up to a woman if you're a celebrity and just grab them by the genitals. I mean, I'm sure you know the word if you live in the same country as I do, because it was everywhere. And you make this point quite frequently, Q, that that historically would have been enough to not only invalidate someone's presidential run and disqualify them from being the presumptive nominee for a major political party, but it would have kind of had them blacklisted from politics altogether. And it indeed
would have had them blacklisted
from everything.
Everything.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so when I say that this is, it shouldn't be surprising, and yet it is, I mean that, because this is, this behavior is still shocking. This man can be convicted. He can be determined to be guilty and liable and what's the word where they indicted and charged, criminally charged over and over and over again, and all his cronies over and over and over again. And somehow on the right, there's this narrative that Joe Biden is at the head of this like criminal family, the Joe Biden crime family. From what I understand, Joe Biden's son has had a problem with addiction and he's lived kind of a wild lifestyle. Joe Biden, not a perfect man. None of these people are. Indeed, I'm not either. But when you compare him to Donald Trump in terms of like integrity and quality of human being, by any measure, from any standard that any human being has, any moral standard, pull it straight from the Bible, if you will, right? Because many people do that. There is no comparison. It is not even fair. It is so overtly, out loud, in front of your face, hypocritical. And as you mentioned, Q, people will see it right in front of their face and be like, nah, that ain't it. It's like, no, we see it. We're looking at it. Nah, that ain't it. And it's like, I know they're not delusional. I know they're not in denial.
They used to. They used to say, nah, that ain't it. They do not anymore.
Okay. I see where you're going. They embrace it.
They used to say, because I guess we can be straightforward here, capitalism would have once required them to deny it to protect their bottom line. One of the scariest and lowest points in my life was that man, with all that we know about him, with all that we knew about him prior to that video, but with all that we knew about him prior with that video and all that we've learned since, still becoming the president. Because then every other person that was pretending to be decent realized, oh, I don't have to do that no more.
Let me tell you how I really feel.
I don't have to pretend to not be racist anymore.
We saw Ann Coulter.
And not only can I still make money, I can become the president of the United States.
And we see these other people.
I can be a racist, fascist, sexist, bigot. And everyone can know it. And I can still become president. And then even after doing a horrible job at presidenting, even after making a mockery of the office, even after inciting a riot.
Hold on. Even after running up 25% of our national debt, that happened under Donald Trump's administration. Go ahead.
I can still get 50, 60 million people to come out and vote for me.
How about that?
So why would I ever pretend to be anything other than what I am? Mm. Actually, let me dig
in a little bit. Right.
Let me go a little bit harder.
So
because not only will I not be punished, I'll be exalted. I'll be lifted up. I'll be deified. Like, Trumpism is almost a religion now. You know, after one of our shows, I had to show Ramdas a video of a woman telling her daughters that it was okay for a man to grope them because she just doubled down on her support of Donald Trump.
Yeah, she wasn't going
to. So rather than say, you know what, maybe I was tripping. Nope. He is who he is and who he is who we believe in. So she turns to her daughters and coaches them into saying it's no big deal.
Sometimes it happens.
For a man to grope them and touch them inappropriately.
It was a really gross video to watch. So, yeah.
And this wasn't in private. This was on the local TV, news, yeah. On television. Yeah. It might have been national news.
Yeah.
Cameras pointed at them, made her daughters humiliate themselves in effort to stand in support of a man she's never met. It is really, really scary and disturbing.
So, we need to figure out why.
Really?
These are human beings, and
we need to have the conversation. I get what you're saying.
Okay.
I'm not trying to figure out why. Well, it's
let me say that. I say this with some frequency on the show. We started this show, and we knew that we were going to have to love our way through some very challenging times, right? And
can we though? And I don't say that to knock us off track, but I think at some point we figured that with love and with reason,
we'd be met with the same thing.
We'd be able to get to a common place. Sure. I do not think
now,
such a place exists anymore.
Now,
Ramses.
Now. For me, none of this stuff that I do, not here, not anywhere, works without the belief that it is possible. Now, here's where I allow the space for this conversation and to learn what is going through the minds of these people. Here's the point, okay? I realize that human beings are imperfect. I realize that human beings, Black people, we are the first human being, and all people are susceptible, vulnerable to fear. We have a drive to protect our species, our posterity, our lineage, etc. And, you know, that list goes on. And we are motivated to take action or corrective action by what we perceive as fear. And if we can be tricked, other people can be tricked. One of the things that helped me frame this is that when Dr. King was alive, we talk about this quite a bit. But when Dr. King was alive, he had a 20% approval rating from Black people, meaning 80% of Black people did not approve of Dr. King. Not his policies, not his anything like that. We can be lost in the sauce too, okay? So when I look on the right and I see, forgive me, my brothers and sisters, when I look at police, when I look at that police officer that was messing with me last week, there has to be a part of me that says, this is my brother. He's lost. And I'm older than he is. So it's more like this is my son. I'm from Africa, the most ancient people, right? That's the spirit that moves this body. So I have to look and say, okay, the love that has caused me to be here, I have to draw from that well in order to interact appropriately with my brother or my son that might be lost. Now, he might have a gun, they might have a political power, they might, you know, this and the third, but as a philosophy, as a person who studied Dr. King and Malcolm X, and realizes that there was indeed a place for both of those philosophies. Trust me, I'll be Malcolm X a lot of the time. I had to realize that without love, A, what's inside of me doesn't really work. I was made out of love. My mother and my father loved each other. That's why I exist. And then B, I feel like you can have a meaningful conversation based out of love, and you can have a divisive, destructive conversation when you don't have that. And it could get devolved, not even with your intention, it could get devolved because they're on their weird stuff. In other words, it's like interacting with a little kid. If I meet a little kid where the little kid don't know no better, and then I do, so it's not gonna work. I have to have a little bit more patience. And I don't mean no disrespect. Well, I kind of do mean disrespect, because a lot of these people need to grow up. But I don't mean it like they're beyond redemption. I mean that it's going to be a long road. It might not happen in my lifetime. And the conversation that we're having right now.
How many lifetimes?
That's an excellent question and a valid question. And I don't know the answer, man. But you and I both know that, like, don't let Q fool you, ladies and gentlemen. Q has a heart big as his chest. Q is a lover too.
Okay, right? So Ramses has said that out loud.
And it's true.
And that is part of the reason that there's callous now. How long is my heart supposed to be exposed and broken and stepped on and stabbed and shot and hanged and burned?
Yeah.
How many cheeks do I have to turn?
Yeah.
How much time do we have? How many lifetimes?
Mm.
Mine, my father's, his father's, his father's, his father's, his father's. Like, at some point, this road is long, sure, but if we're both walking that way, then we'll get there. If the other person has either stopped or started walking the opposite direction, then what are we doing?
Yeah.
Right? Because this doubling down has gotten to be ridiculous at this point. Like, sure. I said, there is no longer a denial of the racism. There's no longer
I see this tweet.
There's no longer a pretending to be ignorant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There is no longer a requirement for them to be righteous or just. They are singular in this idea of white supremacy. We don't have to dance around that.
So
and united on it in a way that is terrifying.
Sure.
Because the rest of us, liberal leaning, right meaning people, just meaning people, good intentioned people, are not united on anything. And the party that is united on racism and white supremacy
is very united.
They're very united.
Yeah.
And they're all going to show up and vote.
Yeah.
So that not just Florida, not just Texas, not just Kansas, but everywhere can start to adopt and vote on laws that make it illegal for us to exist.
So let me say this.
We don't get to have history in some of these states right now. This is not something that's mythological or that might happen or that was introduced and perceived to be ridiculous. Because I have friends that argued with me when some of those bills were introduced. I said, this is scary. And they said to me out loud, there's no way that's going to happen. Why do you believe that? What evidence do you have that makes you think that there's no way it's going to happen? Donald Trump won.
That happened. Yeah.
That happened. He's the person most likely to win again. And you can say the first time caught you off guard. You thought they was just playing. You thought there was no chance he would win. Okay, now that he has, back in the front again. And the people on the other side are not even pretending to be decent. So we keep wanting to meet in the middle, and they keep standing right justified.
So, again.
So, meeting in the middle means meeting on the right.
On their side. I understand this.
And only we want to meet in the middle. They have no interest. You guys come over here or not. Everything that you're trying to do that's actually for the people, we cool on that. We're not letting it happen, no.
So.
And the people you're trying to do it for are going to sour because you didn't deliver on any of those promises. They're going to stop voting. Our people are united on a single front. It is not about policy. It is not even about doing what's in the best interest of your constituents. It is white supremacy, yes. Racism, the word that they're making illegal out loud in front of everyone. And we have to keep hope alive.
Yes.
Based on what?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So now, I said something earlier in the show. I said that we are a liberal country. We are a liberal planet. Now, I don't want to say that that means that everybody's liberal is good and everybody who's conservative is bad, because that's painting with too broad of strokes, and it's not entirely accurate.
Used to not be accurate.
It's still not entirely
accurate. The word conservative in this country is almost synonymous
with that. Let me say,
negative general.
So let me add to that.
Collectively.
Let me add to that. I happen to know that even this show, where we're sharing these ideas and these thoughts right now with our listeners, this would not be on the radio in certain cities had it not been for white men who were admittedly conservative saying this program is necessary. These are conversations we need to have. So I recognize that for me to paint with that broad a stroke might be inappropriate. Are there huge problems that are affecting our people and our brothers and sisters who are also minorities in this country that stem from that wing of the government? Absolutely.
How you vote and who you support means more than even the opportunity that you extend to me to talk about this stuff.
Okay. Okay. I realize that. But it is also possible for a person to vote a certain way and shut the door in our face. And half of something is better than all of nothing.
So,
too.
As long as you pay for me to go to college, it's fine that you've abused me my whole life.
Nah.
See how ridiculous it sounds?
No.
So sure, a person could double down on it. But I don't get to pretend like you didn't abuse me because you paid for college. If after you know better, if after you say, yeah, you guys do need to talk about that, if that's still how you think and still how you vote and still who you support, then I don't care.
So let me say this again. There's a...
Because you no longer have the plausible deniability. That's my point.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Exactly. People that
you're not wrong.
Here's
what I'm saying, Q. You're not wrong. I can't say that you're wrong. What I can say is that there's always a way that I have found to be hopeful in the outcomes that shape the world that I would like to see my sons and my grandchildren and great-grandchildren grow up in. And to look at a person who abused me, who then paid for me to go to college, it's an awful reality to have to deal with. It's awful reality.
Especially if they're still abusing you.
Sure, sure, sure. You're not wrong. But I realize that no matter what, this is a long road full of baby steps. And a long road means, yes, several lifetimes for several people. I said in the beginning of this show, nobody deserves this, but here we are. And we have made progress. We have made progress. And I believe that we will continue to make progress. The thing is, we are up against people like these loyalists who, here, I'll read this real quick. Through the presidential debates and primaries, Pollsters and even some anti-Trump Republicans point to the former president's recent indictment and his no holds bar approach to his GOP rivals as being among the reasons that some in the party are still leaning toward the former president. They like the fact that he's a bully. They like the fact that he gets in trouble and breaks
like
the rules.
Everything about him.
They like the fact that he uses nicknames. They call him a Giga Chad. This is a term that they use. It's like the ultimate buff white guy that doesn't take any mess and gets all the girls and this sort of thing. It's like an internet meme, really gross, cartoonish looking thing, like something off of Beavis and Butthead, but it exists. And a lot of people think that he's their greatest chance at fighting back against the great replacement theory. A lot of white people think that they're being replaced intentionally and think Donald Trump is their best chance to push back against the Jews that are controlling the media and the liberals that run the country, deep state. We're trying to replace white voters and white people in this country, which is all unfounded. But if that's their reality, then Trump is their guy. So we have to move on, unfortunately, because there's a lot more to talk about there, obviously. But it's time for the Way Black History Fact. And today's Way Black History Fact, sponsored by Underground Beach Club. From the streets to the beach, the finest in beachwear. Visit undergroundbeachclub.com. And I'll be pulling from a couple of sources today. NYHistory.org and CentralParkNYC.org. So you can go and check out the full stories. We had to just kind of compile some stuff to share this with you today. But I'll read. Since 1859, millions of people have enjoyed the natural beauty of Central Park. What do you know about the origins of Central Park? Did you know that before the park existed, the land it lies on was home to about 1,600 residents? One neighborhood that once lay within the boundaries of the park was called Seneca Village, although the residents may not have called it that. So that's what we're talking about today for our Way Black History Fact, Seneca Village. All right. No photographs of Seneca Village survive, and no personal papers or living descendants of its residents have yet been found. So how do we know anything about it? What we do know, and why should we care? An important story about this place emerges from newspaper articles, maps, census data, and other records of the day. Seneca Village deserves our attention as one of the first communities of free African-American property owners and immigrants in pre-Civil War New York. Sounds great, doesn't it? Well, the story gets a lot darker, so turn that frown upside down. All right, here we go. Here's what we know. Seneca Village existed between 1825 and 1857. The boundaries of Seneca Village were roughly 82nd Street to 89th Street between 7th Street and 8th Avenues. For those that live in New York or have been to New York, basically where Central Park is. Or Central Park's a lot bigger than this, but it was right in the middle of Central Park. All right. Initially, John and Elizabeth Whitehead, a white couple, bought the land that made up Seneca Village. They soon subdivided and sold it to Andrew Young, Epiphany Davis, both African Americans, and the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church. Shout out to the AME Church. In the 1840s, Irish and German immigrants began moving in. All these groups may have enjoyed being far away from the dirty, crowded slums of downtown Manhattan, where most Irish, German, and African people lived. The 1855 census reported 264 residents of Seneca Village. For African Americans, Seneca Village offered the opportunity to live in an autonomous community far from the densely populated downtown. Despite New York State's abolition of slavery in 1827, discrimination was still prevalent throughout New York City and severely limited the lives of African Americans. Seneca Village's remote location likely provided a refuge from this climate. It also would have provided an escape from the unhealthy and crowded conditions of the city and access to more space both inside and outside of the home. Compared to other African Americans living in New York, residents of Seneca Village seem to have been more stable and prosperous. By 1855, approximately half of them owned their homes. With property ownership came other rights not commonly held by African Americans in the city, namely the right to vote. In 1821, New York State required African American men to own at least $250 in property and hold residency for at least 3 years to be able to vote. Of the 100 Black New Yorkers eligible to vote in 1845, 10 lived in Seneca Village. The fact that many residents were property owners contradicts some common misperceptions during the mid-19th century that the people living on the land slated for the park were poor squatters living in shanties. In other words, in order to take the land from them to build the park, they had to spread falsehoods about the black people living there, saying that they lived in squalor when actually this was a prosperous neighborhood. We'll get there. While some residents lived in shanties and in crowded conditions, most lived in two-story homes. Census records show that residents were employed, with African-Americans typically employed as laborers and in service jobs, the main options for them at the time. Records also show that most children who lived in Seneca Village attended school. According to data, this community was comprised of mostly working-class people and some rising middle-class folks. However, prejudice against African-Americans and the Irish sometimes caused newspapers to report otherwise. One newspaper article compared African-Americans in Seneca Village and Irish residents of a lower part of the park. It states that Seneca Village is a neat little settlement that presents a pleasing contrast to their habits and the appearance of their dwellings to the Celtic occupants. In the lower part of the park, if some of the hogs, goats, and other inmates of the shanties in this vicinity do not die of the yellow fever this summer, it will only be because Death himself hesitates to enter such dirty hovels. And that was something printed in the New York Daily Times on July 9, 1856. All right, other articles refer to the residents of Seneca Village as squatters, as though they were living illegally on public lands while they still own them. In 1853, the city government approved a plan to use something called eminent domain to take over all land in what is now Central Park. During the early 1850s, the city began planning a large municipal park to counter unhealthful urban conditions and provide space for recreation. In 1853, the New York State Legislature enacted a law that set aside 775 acres of land in Manhattan from 59th to 106th streets between 5th and 8th Avenues to create the country's first major landscaped public park. Eminent domain is the state's power to take over private lands for public use. The government offered to pay owners what it claimed was their fair value for their land. They offered nothing to families who rented property in Seneca Village. Many of the landowners believed the government was not valuing the land highly enough, which is likely true given the history of this country's treatment of black people and at that time, Irish people too. All right, African-American landowners had more than just their property to lose with the destruction of Seneca Village. Again, at the time, African-Americans could vote if they owned at least $250 worth of property. Losing their homes meant losing the right to vote, a right that would not be protected by the U.S. Constitution until the passage of the 15th Amendment in 1870, and that was still not practiced for the next century. So, again, we talk about a lot on this show, a lot of what we would consider to be problematic in the black community stems from a lack of wealth, a lack of resources. And the reason for that lack of wealth and the lack of resources is immense, from everything to redlining, black codes, the New Deal not being available to black people, all the way to nowadays, our houses being undervalued, us getting higher interest rate loans for the same sort of credit history and so forth. And that's a whole segment by itself. That's a whole show by itself, to be honest. And we've done that show. So if you want to find out more, please go back and check it out. But here's another example of the theft of black wealth. And you can check out a piece that I made for the Black Information Network called "Should the Free Market Dictate Social Outcomes?" where I describe how black people don't participate in the free market to the degree that white people do because white people have more money. So that's it for us here on Civic Cypher. So once again, I'm your host, Ramses Jha.
He is Ramses Jha. I am once again really, really discouraged.
Yeah, tough show.
And yeah, man, it's scary because we're parents now. And once upon a time, a brighter, better future for our children seemed realistic. And today it doesn't.
Well, hopefully we'll find our light again real soon. And hopefully you can help us out with that. Keep on rocking with us in the free world. Follow us on all social media. I'm at Ramses Jha.
I am Q Ward.
And of course, you can hit us at Civic Cypher on all platforms. Send us some kind words. You can make a donation on the website.
Follow, share.
Subscribe, all of that.
Hate, comment, like.
Especially on YouTube. A little less hate this week. So I think that's about it. So until next week, y'all.
Peace.
Hey, yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous. Dilated, showing you where rhyme travel is. Worlds are spit tunes from sunlight to moon. Bussing off stage like gunfight saloons. Pull my mic back, you like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander slash beat expander. Here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show, get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines, wake up, refuse and resist. Like this, like this.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kbu.fm.
KBOO Radio is hiring. We are accepting applications for an engagement coordinator. The engagement coordinator is responsible for sharing KBOO's mission and values across a variety of social media platforms. They also share content created by volunteers and co-sponsors. We are looking for individuals who have skills writing marketing copy and creating and editing graphic and multimedia content. To apply, send your resume and cover letter to hiring@kboo.org. Applications are due by midnight Sunday, June 4th. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. For more information, go to kboo.fm/engagement-hire. KBOO. The following